Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We are nearing the end of August, and the days are getting shorter. But while the summer may be running out of gas, there are still ways to get some, mileage out of your garden. Today, we'll consider the fruits and vegetables that can thrive in an end of the summer, beginning of fall climate. Joining us in the studio today to talk about the possibilities, Mark Miller. He's education manager at Columbus's Franklin Park Conservatory and Botanical Gardens. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you.
And also from the conservatory, Christy Noli. She's their food and nutrition educator and market coordinator. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
Does that mean, Christy, that you teach about how to cook food?
Yes, I do. And okay. I facilitate other chefs that bring their expertise to the table.
Okay. All right. Well, welcome to the show. Callers, if you have a question about growing in the late summer, early fall, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You should have gotten your lettuce in over the weekend, people. So if you didn't, give us a call and fess up. We'll try to help you get through that trauma. Mark Miller, most of us think of the conservatory as a place to see the exotic. What are you growing over there that relates to Midwestern food gardening?
One of the things that I think a lot of people in Columbus really need to know about Franklin Park Conservatory and Botanical Gardens is that we have a lot outside of the exotic. We have the Scotts Miracle-Gro Community Gardening Campus, which is absolutely beautiful. It's beautifully designed. There's every kind of edible that you can imagine planted over there and done in a beautiful ornamental way. It's gorgeous. We also have some other areas where we have community gardeners come in. And of course, we have our community gardening program, Growing to Green, which Bill Dawson has been doing for 20 years, and he's known as the community gardening guru around Central Ohio. So we have a lot to see and do at Franklin Park.
And they also a lot of people don't think of it as edible, but a lot of what you're doing, you're talking about, they're edible, nice, beautiful to look at gardens.
Yes, that's absolutely true. You know, just because something's edible doesn't mean it isn't pretty. So there's a whole movement to incorporate not only edibles in with your ornamentals, but also to make your edible garden look really good. And it can very easily.
You know, they're adding yet another branch onto the Riverside Hospital. And it makes me sort of sad because they've dug up that whole parking lot. And I remember someone who worked there used to plant tomatoes in the medians of the parking lot. It would just crack me up, you know, that someone was using every little bit of space to grow something edible.
Mm-hmm.
So I never was there at a good time when you could pick them and use them. But so, all right, so what's harvesting now? What's on the platter these days? Christy?
Well, currently we're at peak season for our garden. So we have bumper crops of peppers, tomatoes, eggplant. Those are the main, probably the three big ones that we have in the community gardening campus. And we have many varieties of each of those. So we have several gardens that are designed to accent a country. So in the Chinese garden, we'll have Chinese eggplant, we will have Chinese onions, Chinese cabbage, so that you can kind of see what other cultures might grow in other countries. We have a Brazilian garden this year in honor of our Brazilian butterfly exhibit at the conservatory. And so there's banana trees in that one and pineapple tomatillos and some other Brazilian tomatoes and things like that. So there's a lot of variety, things that you may not be familiar with. So it's a nice place to come and familiarize yourself with some things that you might not have known about before.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. My guests, Mark Miller and Christy Noli from the Franklin Park Conservatory and Botanical Gardens. So we have a beautiful basket out here that's exemplary of what you're harvesting right now.
Right now, yes. And I have a few things in there, like the rainbow Swiss chard, which is a really nice plant.
I love rainbow Swiss chard. I grew a ton of it last year. Couldn't get it to work this year for some reason.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, I don't use pesticides.
Nor do I.
Okay,
do
so even though it's Scotts Mm-mm. Miracle-Gro, they don't use pesticides out there.
We don't. No, and that's one of the reasons why you'll see some of our fruit trees, the apple trees, the peach trees, they're not going to be perfectly pristine fruit because we do not apply any kind of pesticides on it at all. So I brought the rainbow chard as an example of something that you will have that will grow really well during the cool season because mm-hmm. it really loves the cooler temperatures, but it can certainly thrive through the summer too. Mm-hmm. So it's not a bad idea to plant another crop of it.
Right now we could try again?
You could plant another crop of it now and utilize that all the way through until you have a couple frosts.
Yeah, it's yellow and red and... Mm-hmm. It's beautiful.
Gorgeous. I love them. And this is a perfect example of how to incorporate edibles that are also ornamental.
Yeah.
They're beautiful. I've seen them in many different container gardens.
And they're beautiful on the plate, too,
mm-hmm.
because
right.
of
right.
that.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
I had mine over winter last year.
Mine lasted way in. That's why mm-hmm. I was so disappointed this year. But we could do it again. We can try again then. Now.
You could plant right now and have a good crop of Swiss chard. Yeah.
Okay. And then those beautiful eggplants.
Mm-hmm.
What are the main pests for eggplants?
There aren't very many. It's a pretty disease and pest resistant plant. So you might have...
You may have a few that'll be chewing on the leaves.
Okay.
But the fruit themselves generally are looking good because they have very few pests that bother them.
The skins are a little tougher than most fruits, like tomatoes and some other things, and so they tend not to bother them very much.
Mm-hmm. So you have some baby white eggplant. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's a technical word for
it. Well, that's Gretel.
That's okay.
Gretel. It's
yeah,
an Asian.
The cultivar is called Gretel.
Okay.
And there's a Hansel that's purple.
Purple.
Okay. And then is that a purple pepper?
Purple
yes.
bell pepper. Mm-hmm.
And then you have some tomatoes,
yep.
green peppers.
Different varieties of tomatoes and, of course, some...
Banana peppers.
Mm-hmm. Banana peppers and...
cayenne. Cayenne.
Okay.
Yeah, that'll be pretty hot.
Yeah.
And that red one over here, this one is a hot one, too.
Oh yeah. That looks like a bonnet or what do you... It's not...
It's related to a Scotch bonnet, but it's not.
I accidentally grew Scotch bonnet. Last year, which really, you only can use a few of those a year.
Yeah, that's right.
It wouldn't be.
And there was a ton of them.
You know? Oh.
And they're pretty. Mm-hmm. They're very pretty.
They are. Again, a good example of ornamental edible. But for a couple of years, I lived in St. Lucia, and we grew Scotch bonnet down there. And let me tell you, I mistakenly got some in my eyes, and I never did that again.
Right. Exactly. What has this been a good year for?
We've had good, consistent rainfall, so I would say anything that you're growing that requires a good, consistent amount of rain has done very well. So,
any greens?
Greens mm-hmm. have done well.
Peppers.
Peppers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Our eggplant, we've done really well with the eggplant this mm-hmm. year.
And I've noticed that with tomatoes, although they don't have to have constant moisture, when you have consistent moisture, they tend not to get blossom end rot as often.
And it has been that sort of a year. It's mm-hmm. been about once a week or so, mm-hmm. there's been a good rain.
Yeah.
Maybe a little bit more, but not too badly. And then pretty temperate pretty moderate temperatures. And then just enough
great.
Really hot days. Because that's when my tomatoes take off, are on a few of those really hot, steamy days.
And that's why I think tomatoes are a little bit later this year, because we had several weeks of cooler temperatures. So they're playing catch up a little bit now. So right now, I think they're coming into peak.
If you have a question or comment about vegetables, growing vegetables, end of the season, give us a call, 614-292-8513. And you can email us at allsides@wosu.org or check out our Facebook page and post your question or comment there. We'll have a picture of our guests, Mark Miller and Christine Noli from Franklin Park Conservatory and Botanical Gardens there with a basket of their,
bounty.
Of their bounty. It's very, very colorful. You can check that out at our Facebook page if you want. So what's harvesting? You're saying this is the peak harvest. Everything's coming up now?
pretty much, except the cooler season crops.
Okay.
If you planted some things like broccoli or Brussels sprouts in the spring, usually broccoli will bolt or go to flower very quickly because once it gets really, really hot, it tends to not produce as large of florets. And so broccoli and cabbage and a lot of the cruciferous plants are better suited for fall planting.
Oh, so you still, okay.
Yeah, because mm-hmm. you actually get a lot fewer worms that damage the plant, cutworms and things like that that will damage cabbage and broccoli. And so it's actually an ideal time to put in another crop of that if you did it in the spring.
You know, our broccoli did bolt, just flowered up mm-hmm. big time. I think it was while we were on vacation, and we noticed there were so many honeybees going crazy over it. We just let it be for a week mm-hmm. or two, mm-hmm. For about a week, and for some variety mm-hmm. for them.
I think that's great. Yeah.
You know, it made us feel good because we know, of course, they're all disappearing for some reason.
Right,
and
right.
some one of the theories is that there's not enough nutritional variety for them out there now.
That and the overflow of spraying pesticides, just uh-huh. so much of that in our country. So it does deplete the population.
All right. So what else can we be planting? Lettuce now. You said broccoli.
Mm-hmm.
Cauliflower.
What,
Brussels sprouts?
Brussels sprouts.
You could be planting them now?
Yes.
Because we have...
Now.
And I'll tell you what, we planted the Brussels sprouts in the spring. We had a big worm problem.
Right.
But the Brussels sprouts themselves seem to be surviving. It was just sort of the top of the and the leaves. Is that pretty typical? They're gross.
That is pretty typical. They don't really attack the Brussels sprouts, which are actually axillary buds on the stem. That's where you get the Brussels sprouts.
Okay.
So the insects are usually attacking the leaves.
Okay.
And that is very typical.
All right. What about all the black residue from the worms? Just spray it off?
Yeah, with your hose.
Yeah. I would say so.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. We have an email from Robert. He writes, practically the only things that grew in our garden this year were pumpkins and squash, left over from putting Halloween and Thanksgiving pumpkins in the compost pile. They have taken over a corner of the yard. We're not complaining, though. How can we be sure that they grow as big as possible and stay healthy for the fall?
Basically, just keep them watered on a regular basis. That really is what they're going to require at this point. You really don't have to fertilize. It's a little too late to do any fertilizing, per se, because the foliage has already, it's already utilized all its nutrients through the foliage. So what nutrients are there are going to be captured already. Just watering on a consistent basis is what I would do with a lot of the pumpkins and squash.
Yeah, I would make sure they also have, even though I would agree with Christy that you are not going to heavily fertilize at this time, I would make sure that they have enough calcium. That's been a key nutrient in my experience. I know that people that grow these huge pumpkins will even give them baths in milk.
While they're on the vine,
yeah. Seriously.
I know that can be a big problem with tomatoes. If you don't have enough calcium in the soil, you can get that black spot.
That's blossom end
rot.
That is the blossom end rot you were talking about. Okay.
Which is exacerbated by not having consistent moisture.
Okay.
You know, if they go through a dry week and then have a really wet week, you tend to get more blossom end rot. But calcium is absolutely one of the ways to fight that.
All right. My guests, Mark Miller and Christy Noley, they're both from Franklin Park Conservatory and Botanical Gardens. We're talking about end of the season, beginning of a new season, planting and reaping of harvest. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org, or get to a call. You can also check out our Facebook page and post your question or comment there. We'll get to a call when we return. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. It is getting to be the end of one season. It's getting to be the beginning of another. That's in your garden. Tomatoes are ripening. There's lots of things ripening now. But there's also an opportunity to plant more for the coming months. My guests this hour, Christy Noley, she teaches about food and nutrition at Franklin Park Conservatory and Botanical Gardens, and her colleague Mark Miller is the education manager there. If you have a question or comment for them, give us a call, 292-9678. I'm sorry, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org, or check out our Facebook page and post your question or comment there. Beth in Columbus, you have a question about Brussels sprouts?
It's a Brussels sprout and tomatillo combo question with, along with an extra freebie of name that bug. Okay. I've pretty much given up on a couple of the things in the garden. I just decided that this year was just pretty much a loss. The only things that seem to be doing somewhat okay are my plain tomatillos. And then I have a thing of purple tomatillos that just kind of lies around flowers and then doesn't really do a whole heck of a lot. So should I tent those or just leave them alone? And do they need more water? I mean, I kind of check on their roots and stick my finger in the soil. But then there's this really gross bug that's been hanging around the Brussels sprouts.
Okay, wait, let's take one plant at a time, Beth. You're okay. All right, let's stick with the tomatillas.
Well, first off, I would say that I don't know whether you knew this or not, but tomatillos and tomatoes and eggplants are all in the same family, and they can be attacked by the same insects. So keep that in mind. I don't think that you need to be... We've had a good amount of moisture, so I don't think that your limiting factor is whether you're watering enough. But tenting probably would be a good idea.
And what do we mean by tenting?
Well, a cloth or some type of see-through covering over the plant will not only keep more humidity around the plant, but also if you do all four sides, you can keep insects out of that area as well.
Okay.
But it and it can increase the temperature around the plants as well. Now, I keep hearing from Jim Ganahl and some of the weathermen that we might have early frost this year. And tomatillos like heat. They like hot weather.
Yeah, I learned that last year. I did not plant them this year.
Okay.
I was overwhelmed. Okay, so.
So maybe tenting would be the way to go on that.
Okay. And I don't know, Beth, your bug is probably the same one that got after mine. It's a big, ugly worm. Oh, lost Beth. Okay. Anyways, I think it's probably that same.
It's probably a cutworm is what I'm thinking it is. If it's on a Brussels sprouts.
Yeah.
That's usually the biggest problem. And if you want an all-natural solution, I usually recommend diatomaceous earth. It's basically a very fine ground coral product that you can buy and just spread on top of the ground. The thing you have to do is as you get rainfall and as you water your plants, that filters down into the ground a little bit. So you just have to reapply about every week or week and a half.
Uh-huh.
And that helps to keep them from attacking the plants.
What form is it? Is it just like a powder that you sprinkle on it?
It looks like powdered sugar,
okay,
almost. And what the insect, this is kind of gross, but the insect eats it, and when it goes into inside of their intestines, it cuts them all to bits because it's very sharp.
It's like glass.
So
right.
Yeah, if you want to really stick it to those nasty bugs, then give them some diatomaceous earth.
Diatomaceous earth.
They'll
die
a miserable death.
They are so tricky, too. As soon as I think I have them all picked off, I look under another leaf, and they're all curled in. And then, of course, they come in all different sizes, and, you know, they're at all different stages. And I feel your pain, Beth. Let's see. Dan in Delaware, you're on the air. Hi, Dan.
Dan Goodman. Hi, this is Dan. Yeah, I was calling. We have some blueberry questions. In Maine, I'm familiar with some blueberry land that we have up there. That's the different type of low-lying berries that you burn every other year. And here, my mother brought some blueberry bushes down, and I haven't done anything to them, and every year I get less and less of a yield, and I was curious. I know that the acidity of the soil has something to do with that. So I guess my specific question was, is that the case, and is there something you need to add to the soil in the off-season, or do you need to cut the bush in a certain way in the off-season to increase the yield of berries?
You're absolutely right. There is quite a difference between the soils in Maine and here in Ohio. And so you want to have the most fluffy, humus-rich soil that you can get. You know, when people talk about the clay soils in Ohio, I realize, having grown up here, that they are difficult to work with. But keep in mind that they are the most nutrient-rich. They'll hold on to those nutrients. So by adding organic matter and making them fluffier and easier to work with, you have the best soil you can possibly have. And the other thing is that you're right. It does need to be an acidic pH in the soil for blueberries. And it's pretty hard to change the pH of your existing soil. But anything you can add, excuse me, that will lower the pH would be beneficial. So sulfurous kinds of compounds often help with soil pH. Coffee grounds. What else, Christy?
That's probably what I would recommend.
Yeah.
And what you might want to do, because you may not know where your soil is at, is get a $10 soil test kit from any local garden center will have them, and you can easily test your pH soil so that you can find out if that, in fact, is a problem. And usually that will also check your nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium levels. And what's nice about the soil test kits is it has a really comprehensive booklet that's usually inside with the kit that will tell you if your nitrogen level is low, here are options that you can use, both chemical and non-chemical, you know, organic solutions that you can do to increase your nitrogen level or your phosphorus level or your potassium level. And it's also recommended to have two different varieties of blueberry to cross-pollinate. So if you only have one variety, you may want to get
two different varieties.
Unless it is one particular variety you can get that will grow without cross-pollination.
Okay. I've always heard you want like three plants, but I never... Now I have to go back to the drawing board and see if I have different varieties. I'm listening very intently to the blueberry. People can't necessarily see that if you're listening by radio, but I've had blueberry woes. Mm-hmm. Mostly that something gets to the plants early in the season, just chomps them right down to the nub.
Really?
And then they grow back. They look beautiful, but all the berry potential is gone, right?
Well,
I mean, berries, don't they fruit early?
They flower in the spring, and then, of course, they're fruiting in the summer. But deer.
Yeah.
If you have deer anywhere nearby.
They like blueberries.
They like blueberries, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And, Dan, did that help?
Yeah. Yes, thank you very much. In Maine, that's a seagull problem.
Oh,
yeah. We don't have that problem here.
Don't try to raise berries by the ocean. That's where ours is.
Wow.
Thank you very much.
Good
all right,
to
Dan,
know.
Thanks. Take care. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. And Tina in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome, Tina.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thanks.
Okay, I'm growing burpee vine tomatoes in pots because I have dogs. So that's not a good combination. So anyways, I was soaking eggshells in water, and it seems as though when I put them on my tomatoes, the leaves turn yellow.
Okay.
But I thought when you soak, empty eggshells in water, I thought that was supposed to be healthy for your plants.
Calcium, maybe?
Well, yeah, it is giving your plants calcium, but keep in mind that at the same time, you still need a good balance of nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. And sometimes calcium can help to actually raise the pH of your soil, make it a little more neutral or alkaline. And So your tomatoes may be what we call chlorotic, meaning that they're not taking in enough nitrogen and other nutrients to have good dark green leaves. So I would fertilize with something that's either organic or not. It's your decision, but something that has a good amount of nitrogen, phosphorus,
and maybe skip the eggshells for now until you get things squared away, or just add the fertilizer.
I would just add the fertilizer.
Okay. All right, Tina, good luck with that. Let's go to an email. We'll get to a couple more calls in just a second. An email from Edward. He said, do you have any idea why 30 to 40% of my tomatoes are rotting on the vine? My friend in Hilliard is having the same problem. In addition, my zucchini plants rotted early and had to be pulled. Well, this is just, you know, throwing a wrench into all of the what everything we know about zucchini is you can't kill them. So what's he doing?
Well, I would say we have had quite a bit of rain.
Okay.
And so over the last month, more than normal rainfall. And so that could be one of the problems.
Mm-hmm.
If it's not in a well-drained soil condition, if their soils haven't been properly amended and it's not draining properly, because our clay soils hold a lot of moisture.
You don't want any water pooling up and so forth at this point.
Because that can be detrimental to them. So that's probably the first thing I would probably say to check. That's probably what I would.
That's the number one culprit in my mind, too.
And then the tomatoes are rotting on the vine. It sounds like the most common is that.
Well, I don't know whether I'm thinking it's blossom end rot, because that's the most common problem with tomatoes. And so that it's a calcium deficiency. I'd fertilize.
Okay.
Increase your calcium.
But that could also be a result of not having good drainage, too.
Right.
Okay. All right.
I wouldn't put a garden in a low area. You know, a lot of times in the back 40 of people's yards, that's also where all water will drain off their property. And so if it's a wetter area, that can be a little more detrimental to plants when we've had above average rainfall.
All right. Craig in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Craig.
Hey. Wow, a lot of information. I'm kind of new. I'm like a beginner. I've been doing a vegetable garden in my backyard for about 3 years approximately now. And I'm just listening to you talk about how the water drains from your house. And that's kind of not good news for me. But I guess my question is, I started late planting my vegetables, like around the middle of June. And I have about probably six different types of vegetables that I'm attempting to grow. And it seems with all the rain and everything we've had lately, seem to be coming up out of the ground pretty well, but my concern is will the vegetables reach their full potential, being that I started in like the middle of June? And what can I do to kind of help stimulate, I guess, if you will, my vegetables? Is there anything that I can use, fertilizers or whatever?
Well, specifically, what plants are you growing? Because it does depend on the variety of plant you're growing.
I'm trying to grow tomatoes. Mm-hmm. I see my cucumbers are coming, moving along pretty well.
Good.
So far.
What else?
I have two different kinds of peppers, jalapeno peppers. I think I have chili peppers. I have, what else do I have? Carrots that I'm growing. And believe it or not, I actually have a few watermelon plants out there also that's growing, but might have some other different kinds.
I would probably say that everything except the watermelon is a shorter season plant, and you should be fine. You may not get the yields you would have if you planted them at the end of May or first week in June, but you're not that far behind. So I would probably, if you're seeing flowers on your tomato plants, that's a good sign, because every flower will turn into a fruit. So I would say as long as it's producing flowers, same with cucumbers, as long as they're carrots, you're seeing a good growth of the foliage above the ground, you should be fine. You're just going to be a couple weeks behind everybody else.
And you said something about an early frost possibly. So you have to watch that very closely and then just protect them.
Right.
Yeah. Things like peppers and tomatoes, they're a little bit more difficult to protect from the cold, even using any kind of poly house or anything like that. But you can extend your season a little bit longer by using a little hoop poly house around your plants, or build a cold frame, which are pretty easy to do. There's lots of plans on the internet that you can get that are very, very easy to do. I had a friend that used to take old windows, because I lived in the short north, and people were constantly throwing out windows. He would grab them when he saw them by the side of the road, because that makes a perfect top to a cold frame to extend your season.
Okay. All right. Good luck, Craig. You are listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guests are Mark Miller and Christy Noly, both from the Franklin Park Conservatory and Botanical Gardens. We're going to talk about recipes coming up. We'll get to some more calls and emails as well. If you have a caller question or comment and want to talk about some recipes, 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. It's that time of the year when you're plucking the stuff from the garden, and you can also be planting more in the garden for the winter or the late fall harvest. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. With me in the studio, Mark Miller. He's education manager at the Columbus's Franklin Park Conservatory and Botanical Gardens. We'll have a link to that on our website at wosu.org/allsides. Also with us, Christy Noly. She teaches about food and nutrition, and she has recipes that we want to get to. So if you have a question or comment, though, we welcome them. 614-292-8513. Some things coming up. We have on September 4th, cooking at the market from 4 to 6 p.m. That's going to be at the conservatory?
Right. We have a farmer's market every Wednesday from 3:30 to 6:30, right along the main drive of the conservatory. And so it's very convenient. If you're driving down Broad Street, you can pull in and literally 10 steps from your car, basically, you can visit farmers from all over the surrounding area around Columbus and get locally grown produce and some other things like teas and soaps, too.
Do you sell stuff from the gardens at your gardens?
We don't. Okay. Our gardens are primarily grown for community outreach. We supply to lower income families.
Okay.
And also we supply to the Mid-Ohio Food Bank. So most of our produce that we grow is given to the less fortunate. We don't also don't want to compete with the farmers that are growing their produce and bringing it to sell at the market. So we're at a bumper crop right now. We're at the peak season, and it's a great time to visit the conservatory. And we have kids crafts, and there's a kids craft for, they can make an apple for their teacher if they come by the tent between 3:30 and 6:30 this coming Wednesday.
Okay.
And so there's also Walk with a Doc is on September 4th. You can take a walk with Dr. Mary Lynn Nyland from... she's a pediatrician, and you can walk around the park with her. I think September 4th will be an ideal week for her. Every week she's come in the past has been literally blazing hot. So she hasn't had many takers to walk in the garden in the park with her. But it's about a mile trek, and you can talk to her, pick her brain about all kinds of nutrition and exercise and all kinds of stuff.
Okay. Gail in Clintonville, you're on the air. Welcome, Gail.
Yes, I would like to know, what is it with the stink bugs this year in the garden? My cucumber plant, every time I go out there, there's like two or three of them on my cucumber plant, and I've tried that insecticide soap. It's an organic insect killing soap, and I spray that on. Of course, every time it rains, you have to reapply it. And I bought one of these stink bug traps, and I'm just wondering if these people think that that's a pretty good solution, the stink bug trap.
Do the traps attract them or just trap
them? It traps them.
I know. I'm asking Mark Miller and Christy Nolle. Do they? There's a theory that they also attract them.
Yeah, when I owned my own garden center in the Short North, I always told people, buy the traps for your neighbor.
Yeah, put them in your
because they will attract them and get them out of your yard and into their yard. And the same applies for the Japanese beetle traps.
Oh, boy, that's
traps.
How I learned at the hard.
Same exact
yeah, that's
thing.
Right.
I mean, they work, but it definitely will attract more to your yard than you probably would have had before. But it does take care of the problem, you know, some of the problems. So...
It's putting out that pheromone all over the neighborhood. Come here.
Right. I learned that the hard way. And then the stink bugs, though. Is there a stink bug uptick in stink bugs this year?
There is.
Okay. I've noticed them in my house, but I haven't noticed them on my plants.
Yeah. No, we do have an overabundance of stink bugs. I wouldn't exactly call it a plague, but we have had a lot of stink bugs.
And they're hard on things like cucumbers, or do they have plants they especially like, or not necessarily?
Well, honestly, I can't answer that.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't
sure
know
either.
Whether they what their host plant is for munching down.
Okay.
to me, they're just more of a nuisance than anything.
Yeah.
I don't know whether they're...
I haven't noticed any plant problems, but Gail, good luck with that, and move those stink bug traps. 614-292-8513. We do want to talk about cooking, but what's Christy Nolle? What are you pitching this week?
Well, I brought a few recipes with me because I thought I would highlight what you can pull out of the garden in the fall that you can create very easy recipes with. And one of my favorites is arugula, beet, and feta cheese salad. It's so simple. And you can substitute things if you don't have some of the ingredients, but it's really easy.
When are the beets going to be ready?
Well, beets you can plant now, and they're kind of a quick crop. So you could actually harvest those 35 to 40 days from the time that you plant them.
Yeah.
And some people plant them in the spring too, so it's a twice a year, twice a season crop. So, but if you still have some that you harvested earlier, you can use them in this salad, or you can wait until your arugula is ready to harvest again. And just by washing some arugula, roasting the beets, that's the best way I found to eat them. You can boil them, but it does take some of the nutrients out. And I think the sugars really are released more prominently if you roast them in the oven. And it's a great way, like if you had roasted beets one day and you had leftovers, it's a great way to utilize those in the salad.
I never have leftovers, but go ahead.
Well, you could plan on making extra
than what you think. I'm the pan picker.
Yeah. That's the best.
Yeah. But just adding, you can either add pecans or walnuts. They're really great to add for a crunch in the salad. And you can add goat cheese if you have the budget for that, or go back to feta cheese. That's a little less expensive. Mm-hmm. But either of those cheeses will work really well with a basic vinaigrette of olive oil, balsamic vinegar. Balsamic vinegar really pulls out the flavor of the arugula and the beets. Nice combination. So it's pretty easy to make.
We have an email from Mallory. We planted lettuce in the spring and got a good crop before it bolted. However, they were eaten alive by what we believe were potato bugs and slugs. What is the best way to keep those bugs off our lettuce? Is it important to keep the leaves from touching the ground? If so, how? Is it true we can plant another crop for... Okay, now we already know that. Yes, you can plant another crop for fall.
Basically, any lettuce you can plant for fall.
Right.
And if you wanted to try to grow them in the summer, like if you wanted to start them a little bit earlier, you can put them underneath trellises and things that might shade it a little bit to keep your lettuces from getting so hot, because they like the cooler temperatures. But spinach is a great thing to put in now. Any of the greens, collard greens, arugula, mosh.
Swiss chard. Okay, I'm going to try that again.
Yep.
Any of those you can.
I suspect that I've never really heard of potato beetles being the culprit on lettuce, but certainly slugs are a concern. Yep.
And or rabbits. They can be, if you have rabbits.
Well, then you just, you know.
But if you've got slugs, you know, there are organic treatments that you can use, like the diatomaceous earth that Christy mentioned earlier. That's a really good way of treating for that.
Yeah, I've seen potato bugs. I tried to grow potatoes, and those things are almost as bad as those cutworms on the... They're gross.
Yeah, but they're big enough that you can see them, so you can go in and pick them off and dispose of them the way you want.
It's just bad. Okay, and then also for Mallory, we have so much mint.
Yeah.
Not an uncommon problem. Do you have any good recipes for mint besides mojitos, I guess?
Yes, tabbouleh salad.
Oh, yeah.
I'm of Middle Eastern descent, so I have my mom's recipe for tabbouleh salad, which basically uses a large amount of mint. You can use your tomatoes that you probably are ready right now in the garden, a large quantity of parsley, bulgur wheat that's been soaked in water, and scallions. And olive oil, lemon, salt, and pepper. It's pretty easy to make.
Chop it all up pretty finely.
Yeah, everything. Right. That's what takes the most amount of time with tabbouleh salad. It's just a lot of chopping.
Do you use your food processor to chop it, or you do it all by hand?
I don't own a food processor.
Okay, one of those purists.
I chop it with a knife. Well, when you live in a small place, you just don't have room for all the gadgets. Uh-huh. So a knife is easier to store than a food processor.
Right.
So.
But you do want to chop it very... finely.
Very finely. Everything should be very finely chopped. The tomatoes probably are the largest dice.
Does it matter with the parsley if it's the flat leaf parsley or the curly leaf?
It doesn't. My mom always used the Italian parsley because I think it has a little bit more flavor than the curly leaf parsley.
Parsley is another thing that you can be planting now. Mine overwintered for me and came back.
Wow.
Yeah.
And if we get good snow cover, it will last all through the winter. So you just go out and remove some snow, and you can harvest. Sometimes the chard you can harvest. The
chard
parsley,
I was
mint.
Able to harvest, but my parsley, I haven't been able to do that yet. So.
Yeah, and they're packed with vitamins and minerals.
Yeah,
yep.
I throw it in salad
really
all the time,
good.
Just chop up a little bit. Just chop off the leaves and throw the leaves in as if, you know.
You can make a pesto out of that.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Penny in Centerburg, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Penny.
Hi. I've got a problem with my tomatoes. In fact, I've had the same problem for 2 years. They die.
that's a bummer.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we stake them on big wire cages, and I mulch with a layer of paper and in grass. And they did fine this year all through the flooding rain, but as soon as it stopped raining, they started dying at the bottom and went right up to the top. And right now they are completely dead. There are tomatoes on there, look like crazy, but there are tomatoes there. And I'm harvesting if I pull them and let them lay out on the deck, you know, ripen that way. But I don't know what's causing the plants to die.
When you say they're dying from the bottom, do you mean it's the bottom tomatoes that go first, or that the tomatoes are, each tomato is dying from the bottom?
The plant itself, the leaves and the stems are what's dying. And the tomatoes that have already set on stay there. Basically, they're hanging on wire and ripening, but they're not ripening well.
Two things come to mind. If you've got very well-drained soil, I would recommend when you plant your tomatoes, plant them quite deep, deeper than you normally would anything else. Plant them deep, almost up to where you would see the first set of leaves.
That's what I do.
Okay.
I plant in raised beds, too.
Oh, all right. So you do have good drainage.
Yeah.
About the only other thing I can think of is that make sure that they have the nutrients and minerals that they need, because they could be dying off. The older foliage dies off first when they're really lacking in nutrients.
Okay.
And I'd recommend that you make sure it's a consistent. It's too late now, because if they've already gotten to that point, you're probably just going to harvest what you have. But for future reference, a consistent moisture is always better. So if you're skipping a couple of days of watering when it's really hot and dry, don't forget to go out and move that grass and newspaper away from the plant a little bit to see how wet or dry the soil is. And that way you will know whether you need to provide extra moisture.
Okay. One other thing. I've heard that if you plant a ground cover like rye in the fall and then mow it under in the spring, that that's good for your garden?
Definitely. I recommend clover because that's a really good winter cover plant. It's easy to grow. It doesn't grow too tall. And all you do is till it into the ground as soon as the soil is workable in the spring.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Sure. Thank you, Penny. So what other recipes are on your list here today, Christy Noli?
Well, I always recommend roasted vegetables because that's not a hard and fast recipe. I mean, you can basically, whatever you have in the refrigerator that you could roast is what you can use. From onions, eggplant, zucchini, cherry tomatoes are great because a lot of people end up with way more than they can eat on a salad. But you can throw them in the oven with all different kinds of potatoes. I recommend the Yukon Gold or the red skin potato, not a russet potato.
Mm-hmm.
Butternut squash is coming on, so you're probably going to have a lot of squash to use up. Really roasting the vegetables with a little bit of olive oil, maybe a little bit of balsamic vinegar to finish, salt and pepper. That's all you really have to do. Toss them a couple times on a baking tray, about 475 degrees, and stir about every 10 minutes for about 40 minutes, and you've got incredible vegetables. And they're great. If you have leftovers, if you're not Anne and you don't pick everything out of the pan, you can throw those into with some vegetable stock or chicken stock and make a vegetable soup with add barley or rice or some other. You could add a protein if you wanted to add any kind of meat. And you can actually use those roasted vegetables to make a soup later in the week.
You know, one of the things I love to roast is turnips.
Yes.
Roasted turnips, fantastic. Mm-hmm. And parsnips.
Yep.
And sweet potatoes.
With parsnips, it's good to cut out that really tough center of them if
like
you can.
Like the core.
The core.
Yeah.
It doesn't roast quite as easily for some reason. It's chewier. But anything.
Good stuff.
Yum. Good question from Judith in an email. She says, when you say we can plant chard, lettuce, et cetera, in the fall, is that from seeds or from small plants?
Both.
Okay.
If you started a couple weeks ago, even as late as July 25th, you could plant from seed. I planted some lettuce on July 25th, and it actually is about 5 inches tall right now.
And
so it's ready to start harvesting.
The other question someone brought up about the slugs or whatever was getting at their lettuce plants. I had a really big problem with my iceberg lettuce I tried for the first time this year. I do all the leafy green stuff, but the iceberg, that was just kind of gross. Are they particularly prone to slugs and that sort of thing?
Yes, they are.
Okay, so it's not just me.
It's not just you.
Okay.
I've never grown iceberg lettuce.
I just thought for the heck of
nor
it.
Nor have I.
You know?
We're looking down our collective nose at Anne, because iceberg,
try something different. You know, everyone, with tacos, iceberg is, you know, it's crispier and stuff, but
romaine. Romaine
is
a great one to grow.
We do. Romaine's great. But, I just wondered if they were more prone, and now I know it's at me, and I'll never do it again because I've been shamed. But Mark Miller, thanks so much for joining us today. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you.
Mark Miller, he's education manager at Columbus's Franklin Park Conservatory and Botanical Gardens, and also with him is colleague Christy Noli. She teaches food and nutrition there. Christy, nice to have you on the show.
Thank you, Anne. I appreciate it.
We'll have a link. There's all kinds of things going on. The Farmers Market on Wednesdays continues through September 4th. If you want more information, check out the link on our website at WOSU.org/AllSides. And thanks for all your great questions, and thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.